Okay, welcome back, everyone. My name is Tanya Sheehan. I teach at Colby College in the U.S., and I'm also the editor of the Archives of American Art Journal at the Smithsonian. I'm very pleased to introduce our last panel today before the keynote. We are ending where we began with contemporary photographic images. And I'm going to introduce the two speakers individually, but we will have questions at the end. I will refrain from making any comments on my own because we're running over time. And we will be finishing up the session today by 5 so that we can start the keynote right after that. The first speaker is Temanuga Trifonova. She is an associate professor of cinema and media studies at the University of York in Canada. She's the author of several books, including Warped Minds, Cinema and Psychopathology, European Film Theory, and The Image in French Philosophy. Her first feature film, Man of Glass, won the Cinematic Vision Award at the 2013 Amsterdam Film Festival. Today she will present a talk titled Still/Moving, The Photographic Image in the Post-Medium Condition. Please welcome Professor Trifonova.
Hello, everyone. I'll just jump right in. So the first part of my talk, there will be no images. Sorry about that. So the photographic image in the post-medium condition. In recent scholarship on photography and cinema, there has been a notable shift from a semiotic to a phenomenological and political analysis of the photographic image, of the photographic index in terms of affect. In the emergence of cinematic time, perhaps the most exhaustive study of indexicality and archival desire, Marianne Doan locates the index on the threshold of semiosis. Indexicality refers to photography's and cinema's capacity to record a plenitude of information irreducible to signification. However, Doan also reminds us that, quote, the index is evacuated of content. It is a hollowed out sign. Hence, indexicality, together with its seemingly privileged relation to the reference, to singularity and contingency, is available to a range of media. The insistency and compulsion Pierce associates with the indexical sign are certainly attributes of television and digital media as well. Witness the televisual obsession with the live coverage of catastrophe, the ultimate representation of contingency, chance, instantaneous, end of quote. Here, indexicality and contingency become conflated with the unpredictability of natural catastrophes, while instantaneity signifies the ease with which we access information. Doan understands the index no longer in terms of the deeply historical relationship to reality photography was said to guarantee by virtue of its automatism, but in terms of the affective response, which she describes in terms of intensity, that both analog and digital images can produce. You can guess what that meant. This shift from the index as a semiotic category to the affective response to the index points to a new understanding of indexicality as something produced. The implication is that it is certain representations that guarantee a spectatorial experience of intensity, i.e. indexicality, rather than the index serving as a representations guarantee. Doan relies on photography's double indexicality, by which she means, on one hand, the indexical trace, the footprint, the fossil, the photograph, carries a historicity, makes the past present, and on the other hand, the deictic index, the signifiers here, now, this, that, which are inextricable from the idea of presence. So she relies on this idea of double indexicality to counter criticisms about the alleged loss of indexicality brought about by the digital. Quote, only the first, the index as imprint or trace, preeminently the footprint, seems to correspond to the cinematic image. But for Pierce, the trace was only one genre of index and not necessarily the most crucial, decisive one. The pointing finger, instantiated in the this of language, incarnated the very idea of indexicality, its purest form, end of quote. Doan points to the photographic and film frame as the site where the two seemingly incompatible definitions of the index are negotiated. Quote, the frame directs the spectator to look here, now, while the trace reconfirms that something exists to be looked at. There are two temporalities at work here. While the index's imprint, as trace, endures, that this exhausts itself in its own present. The dialectic of the trace, once or pastness, and deixis, now or presence, produces the conviction of the index, end of quote. Thus, Don redeems the digital from the indexical critique by arguing that one aspect of the index as trace, and the specific temporality associated with the trace, passness, has been unduly privileged over the other aspect of the index as deixis, or pointing finger, possessing its own temporality presence. In What is the Point of an Index, Tom Gunning seeks to demonstrate that the digital and the indexical are not mutually exclusive by proposing that the index is meaningless outside of the visual accuracy or recognizability of the image. The fascination we feel when confronted with a photograph, he claims, stems not from any desire to know how it was made, whether it has a real referent or not, but rather from the ability to recognize, from our ability to recognize its visual resemblance to a referent, however different it might be from it. End quote. The power of the digital, or even the traditional photographic, to transform an image depends on maintaining something of the original image's visual accuracy and recognizability. I use this phrase to indicate the manner in which indexicality intertwines with iconicity in our common assessment of photographs. End of quote. Gunning challenges the usefulness of the notion of indexicality by downplaying the photograph's semiotic structure and foregrounding our phenomenological investment in the photograph. Quote, it is only by a phenomenological investigation of our investment in the photographic image, digital or otherwise, that I think we can truly grasp the drive behind digitalization and why photography seems unlikely to disappear. I'm positing a phenomenological fascination with photography that involves a continuing sense of a relation between the photograph and a pre-existing reality. While this is precisely what indexicality supposedly involves, I'm less and less sure this semiotic term provides the proper or sufficient term for the experience. End of quote. The knowledge of how the photograph was produced, the indexical relation to a real object guaranteed by the light bouncing off of the object, cannot explain, according to Gunning, our fascination with it. Departing from Bazin and Barthes, Gunning claims that the qualities that make a photograph fascinating are not necessarily those related to indexicality, i.e. to temporality. Instead, he emphasizes the photograph's sense of a nearly inexhaustible visual richness, that's a quote, the delight in visual illusion it provokes, and its ability to put us in the presence of something that is not necessarily a real referent. Significantly, these are all qualities we associate with digital rather than analog images. Like Gunning, Thierry Duduve also urges us to consider the psychological response produced by the photograph's illogical temporality rather than the semiotics of the index. Quote, what is in question here is the affective and phenomenological involvement of the unconscious with the external world rather than its linguistic structure. End of quote. Every photograph, he goes on to argue, has built into its semiotic structure the trauma effect and the mourning process. Similarly, in Digital Editing and Montage, The Vanishing Celluloid and Beyond, Martin Lefebvre and Marc Faustinon claim that insofar as digital images are made in the hope of being interpreted as photographic, they should be considered indexical. Their index is photography rather than reality. In order to demonstrate that every sign is indexical, the authors analyze a realist painting of a house, represented in a way that allows us to read it as a sign of domesticity. And the following is a kind of a longish quote from their article. The hypothesis is that houses of this sort really belong to our concept of domesticity. The house in the picture is thus conceived as belonging to a class of experiential objects, i.e. as being indexically connected to that class by contiguity. Moreover, if the house really exists, then the painting can be seen to have been determined by the existence of a house belonging to the class of objects falling under the concept of domesticity. If, on the other hand, it is a mere figment of the painter's imagination, still it is its connection to other existing houses belonging to the class of objects falling under the concept of domesticity that has partly determined it. End of quote. Here in this quote, the house functions as an indexical sign merely by virtue of belonging to a general type, houses, existent or imaginary, which fall under the concept of domesticity. The authors argue that this example, quote, illustrates that every sign, whether it be about some individual existent or about the general type, requires indexicality. In short, all signs, including digital images and cinematic fictions, should they mean anything, are to be understood ultimately as indexically connected to reality, end of quote. Here, I believe, indexicality becomes conflated with legibility. If a sign is legible, it must be because it is indexical. All signs are automatically indexical because indexicality is merely, quote, the semiotic function by which a sign indicates or points to its object. Now, any given object, whether it be a photograph, a film, a painting, or a CGI, is connected with the world in a number of different ways, unlimited ways, all of which are ways in which it can serve as an index. Thus, it makes no sense to say, for instance, that a traditional photograph is more or less indexical than a digital image, since we cannot quantify the number of ways in which a given thing can serve as a sign, end of quote. So as we can see, like Gunning, Lefebvre and Forstenot proposed temporality as just one of the many ways in which a sign can function indexically. An index does not have to be a trace, an imprint of a past moment. Indeed, they go as far as to suggest that there is an entire spectrum of different degrees of indexicality, including what they call direct and indirect indexicality. For example, an index of artistry or an index of style being examples of indirect indexicality. In Photography's Double Index, Robin Kelsey and Blake Stimson also emphasize the aspect of the index as deixis over its other aspect as trace or material inscription. While they acknowledge that the digital has exacerbated our skepticism toward indexicality, they still insist on, quote, the possibility of photography's meaning re-emerging in some new form. In their optimistic vision of a new republic of photography, the loss of the index as material inscription is redeemed by the re-emerging social meaning of photography. Here, a preoccupation with the social uses of photography replaces the old concern with the ontology of the photographic image. Quote, trust in photography, once vested in its indexicality, must now be lodged in its ability to facilitate social commitments, the traffic between the burgeoning image world and the social and political realities in which it is materialized. We look for the meaning of photography now in the sense of accountability, the sense of photography's double index, as a value around which consensus can take hold, rather than as a valid or spurious truth claim flowing inevitably from a technology of automatic registration, end of quote. Notable here, again, is the shift from questions of medium specificity and ontology to pragmatic concerns such as accountability and value. In a better example is a photograph. François Brunet argues that indexicality is a function of what he calls collateral knowledge. We relate to photographs as indexical because we know that this is how we should relate to them, because we know how they're made. Indexicality is therefore signified rather than perceived intuitively or immediately. According to Brunet, Pierce's discussion of photographs had nothing to do with their indexical nature and everything to do with the social fact of photography's growing popularity in the 1890s. Although Brunet acknowledges that Pierce's assumption of a collateral knowledge of and about photography has become untenable in the digital era, he insists that this is not because digital photography is less indexical or more iconic, but, quote, because the technological procedures involved in its production and circulation are infinitely more complex, diverse, and opaque than the procedures governing popular photography around 1900, end of quote. In Molecular Documents, Photography in the Post-Production Era, or How Not to be Trapped into False Dilemmas, Jorge Ribalta describes the crisis of indexicality as a social and political crisis rather than an ontological one, similar to the other critics that I've been discussing. The question raised by the digital is not a question of minimum specificity, he argues. Rather, the question now is, quote, whether photography without realism is culturally possible and politically desirable, end quote. Given that traditional photography was linked to the notion of document, testimony, and historical representation, with the loss of realism, has photography lost its historical mission, the construction of a universal archive? Ultimately, Ribalta sees the digital not as the death of photography, but as an extension of the ideological and cultural critique of photography as an objective reproduction of reality. And this is a quote, with Photoshop, the understanding of images as cultural and ideological constructions is generalized. We need a critique of the critique that does not recall modernist notions of photography as universal language, but new, complex, and meaningful renegotiations of realism with universalism. We need a kind of staged realism, able to overcome the false opposition between the index, naturalized by Photoshop as the photographic past, and the fake, naturalized in the current and future post-photographic condition. Finally, in Photography as a Medium of Reflection, Bernd Stiegler offers the most extreme version of the rethinking of indexicality I have been tracing so far. According to him, the photographic image is not concerned with reality, but with our ideas about reality. Photography is a meta-medium, or a reflective medium, what he calls it, a reflective medium. Since what counts in this context is not reality as such, but our ideas about reality, the most artificially constructed photograph is no different from the chemical photograph. Any claims about the death of photography and of digital images as fake are incorrect because, quote, photography is not concerned with simple mimesis, but with the mimesis of mimesis, with the meaning of meaning. It is neither a matter of naturalism nor of constructivism, but rather of a reflection on constructivism as well as on naturalism conveyed by means of this medium, end of quote. This re-examination of indexicality that I've traced so far has been accompanied by a parallel re-examination of the concept of medium specificity away from the idea of medium as a material physical support. The 2011 edited volume, Between Stillness and Motion, Film Photography Algorithms, testifies to the growing obsolescence of the concept of medium specificity. In the introduction, the editor, Ivan Rosak, defines the boundaries of what he sees as an emerging cross-interdisciplinary field he calls the still-moving field, identifying three phases in its evolution so far. First, a turn to the in-between, the ontology of the photographic and film image in between stillness and motion. Second, a turn to history, the re-examination of early cinema by the new film historians like Gunning, Elsasser, and Alberich. And third, a turn to algorithms, code information to digital. Other scholars have also drawn attention to the contemporaneous existence of increasingly hybrid forms, challenging the traditional association of cinema with motion and time, and of photography with stillness and timelessness. In photography's expanded field, George Baker introduced the notion of expanded photography, problematizing any attempt to determine whether given work is an instance of cinema's remediation of photography or photography's remediation of cinema. In Photography and Cinema, David Company claims that while the history of avant-garde cinema has been the history of cinema's gravitation toward photographic stillness, contemporary art photography has been gravitating toward cinema. Peter Wallen has shown that just as movement is not essential to film, still photographs, while not narratives in themselves, can be considered elements of narrative. And finally, Laura Mulvey problematizes the medium-specific distinction between still and moving images by reminding us that slowing down or freezing the moving image returns indexicality to it, thereby encouraging a more fetishistic involvement with the image, similar to our fetishistic investment in the photograph. In the remainder of my paper, I would like to point to some examples of the ways in which contemporary art photography, specifically the staged or cinematic photography of Barbara Probst, Gregory Crutzen, and Jeff Wall, challenges the distinction between photography and cinema. Straddling the border between the still and the moving, their photography constitutes the artist's work on the moment rather than registering the moment's work on the artist. Instead of time affecting these artists directly, as it does in spontaneous witness photography, the artists that I'm going to talk about stage time.
Sorry, I need to type in your password first.
Contemporary culture, the rate at which images are produced, distributed, and archived far exceeds the rate at which they can be grasped or interpreted. The instant everywhere of the digital has prompted cinematic photographers like Gregory Crutzen. In contemporary culture, the rate at which images are produced, distributed, and archived far exceeds the rate at which they can be grasped or interpreted. The instant everywhere of the digital has prompted cinematic photographers like Gregory Crutzen to revive classical cinema's attention to mise-en-scène, to composing the shot, as a resistance to the increasing disposability, casualness, and availability of images. Crutzen's photography mimics cinema in scale, conceptualization, and execution. The Twilight series, which... series from 1998 to 2002, for instance, consists of 40 plates forming what Gustavo Mercado calls an image system, the use of recurrent images and compositions in a film to add layers of meaning to a narrative. One of the central terms in all writing on photography is the moment or the instant, And two of the most well-known ways in which the moment has been conceptualized are through Lessing's idea of the pregnant moment and Cartier-Bresson's idea of the decisive moment. Neither of these concepts, however, can exhaust the temporal complexity of Crutzen's images. The strongest pull a straight photograph has for the viewer is a sensation of arrested or stilled time or life. We might not be able to tell from the photograph what exactly happened before or after the shot was taken, but we feel strongly that something did happen. By contrast, Crutzen's images create the sense that the depicted moment condenses an entire situation rather than a plot point in a story. The sense of time in these images is cumulative rather than subtractive. We feel the entire life of these characters has been accumulated into this one shot rather than the shot being a pregnant moment isolated from a host of insignificant moments in their lives. Paradoxically, Crutzen's staged photographs recall Benjamin's description of the aura of early photography, whose long exposure times demanded, quote, that the subject focus his life in the moment rather than hurrying on past it. During the considerable period of the exposure, the subject, as it were, grew into the picture, end of quote. Benjamin's aura was the result of early photography's technical limitations, long exposure times, which condensed the subject's whole life into a single moment. Like the subjects of Benjamin's early photographs, Crutzen's models pose for an extended period of time, while the director, as he refers to himself, because he refers to himself as a director rather than a photographer, and his crew fiddle with the elaborate mise-en-scene, the lighting, the set design, etc. However, the effect of Crutzen's photographs is to condense fictional rather than real time, as was the case in Benjamin's early photography, as he discusses. Lessing introduced the notion of the pregnant moment in Laocoon, 1766, where he argued that unlike the temporal arts, for example, poetry, the spatial arts, painting and photography, can only make use of a single moment in the course of an action and must therefore choose the one in which is most suggestive and which serves most clearly to explain what has preceded and what follows. Insofar as the pregnant moment is the most narratively significant moment, the question whether Crutzen's photographs depict the pregnant moment is related to the question of narration and fictionality in still versus moving images. In Photography and Fictionality, Jens Schotte challenges photography's alleged fictional incompetence, usually seen as a result of its indexicality. Working from film theorist Edward Brannigan's definition of fiction, Schrotter defines fiction as, quote, a specific cognitive process in which, step by step, an initially undetermined reference is augmented, unquote. Fiction then presupposes a process of narration, which, quote, allows us step by step to form, confirm, or reject assumptions about the referential status of the object presented, end of quote. Since a photograph is not extended temporally, so the argument goes, it is incapable of narrating and is thus fictionally incompetent. The idea of fictional competence as dependent on narrational competence leads to some paradoxical conclusions about staged photography like Crutzen's. An image possesses fictional competence, i.e. it can tell a story, only if its initial reference is undetermined, which triggers the cognitive process of augmenting the reference and evaluating its referential status. Conversely, the more determined the initial reference, the more fictionally incompetent the image should be. By this logic, a staged photograph would have the lowest degree of fictional competence. But this is not true of Crutzen's photographs. The high degree of fictional competence of his photographs is due not only to their highly determined, i.e. staged initial reference, but also to their ambivalent temporality. Each image produces numerous possible scenarios, but the story remains vague because the sequence of events is left ambiguous. Any of the moments we might imagine as coming before the moment represented in the image could actually be a moment coming after the moment represented, and vice versa. In other words, the sequence of events we might imagine is reversible. What we see in the image could be either the pregnant moment, which would infuse the image with a sense of expectation of what is going to happen next, the climax, or it could be the aftermath of events that have already taken place. For example, in Plate 25, which was one of the first ones we see a school bus turned upside down in the middle of the street, smoke coming out of it, but the children passively standing or sitting around it, indifferent to what we had assumed to be a serious road accident, make us question whether we are looking at the aftermath of the accident or the bus is going to explode in the next moment. In Plate 31, a young woman with an inscrutable expression on her face looks out the window. Behind her, out of focus, stands a man whose relationship to her is unclear. Is he her lover, brother, father, husband? Nothing in their body posture or in the composition of the shot gives us a clue as to whether we are looking at the aftermath of a fight or the beginning of one. In Crutzen's photographs, it's impossible to situate the moment we're looking at within a single story, because what we imagine to be the past could very well be the future and vice versa. Crutzen's photographs seem to revive some aspects of the neorealist film aesthetic as discussed by Deleuze in The Time Image, whereas the movement image of classical cinema subordinated the duration of events to their place in a cause-and-effect narrative, The cinema of the time, in which dwells upon the mundane details of everyday life, often through long takes, purposefully denarrativizing time. Crutzen's images betray an obsessive attention to detail, whose purpose, ironically, is to create a space and time as nondescript and vague as possible. Quote, this is what he says about his images, "You vaguely recognize my scenes as 50s, 60s, but on the whole, it's outside of time." I have 20 more minutes?
No, this is... you've done
20 minutes. Oh. Okay. Well, I can stop now. It's 20 minutes, even though I'm in the middle of it.
No, we can wrap up. Just take your time.
Well, I have two other photographers to talk about. I don't know. Should I skip that? Or?
To you, but it's my job to tell you.
Yeah. Well, I didn't anticipate the technical difficulties. So.
No, it's actually 22.
Okay.
Just
I'll skip the rest on Crutzen. I'll say a little bit on the other photographer, Barbara Probst, in her 2007 photo series Exposures. Barbara Probst uses as many as 12 cameras and tripods arranged around the subject to photograph multiple points of view captured in separate images but taken simultaneously with a single radio-controlled shutter release. The multiplication of points of view prevents the viewer from taking them in at a glance and imposes a time of reading. Although the multiple vantage points expose the multiplicity and heterogeneity of the instant, they also eliminate the outside by making the act of archiving time itself an object of representation. Rather than the index being an imprint of the past, as in Bazin and Barthes, we witness the instant doubling back on itself, automatically producing its own record in the presence. And then maybe I can skip the... I analyze several of the particular of the specific images that I've shown here to show how influenced she is by cinema and photography, but I'm going to skip all that. And I'll just read the part on Jeff Wall. Jeff Wall's slide box photographs, which are the last ones that you show here, that we saw here, more reminiscent of projected film stills than of traditional photographs, betray his preoccupation with the materiality of light via the illuminated image and can thus be read as a response to the waning of indexicality manifested in the reduction of the materiality of light to an abstract symbol. His large-scale photographs are structured dramatically like movies, and he describes his method of preparing for a shoot in cinematic terms, in terms of location scouting, for example. Like Probst, Wall challenges the notion of photography's instantaneity by infusing the photograph with time through the use of digital technology, which allows him to blur the boundaries between photography and painting by means of cinema, opening up the photographic moment to temporalization and narrativization. I'll just skip all of that. To conclude, even though I skipped a lot, contemporary photography seeks to reclaim the cinematic within the photographic from within the twilight of indexicality. Rather than putting us in a deep historical relation with time, itself consciously reflects on indexicality, automatism, and duration. Thank you.